I want to get back to this story. It's very revealing politically, very interesting. The ACLU had posted a statement on its website after the Zimmerman verdict, expressing disappointment and talking about the, quote, imperative to carry out a federal civil rights and hate crimes investigation against George Zimmerman. They have pulled that statement. According to Josh Gerstein in the Politico, a liberal-leaning news website in D.C., the withdrawal of the initial statement on the Zimmerman verdict appears to leave a letter from last week from the ACLU to the Attorney General as the operative version of the ACLU's views on the case. That letter says the group opposes a retrial, but endorses other measures the organization believes can reduce racial profiling and related violence. So you now have, again, if you're just joining me, the ACLU, which had posted a statement after the day after the Zimmerman verdict, calling for a federal investigation in hate crimes inquiry into George Zimmerman, has now pulled back and taken that statement off its website. I think that's just more evidence of the obvious. And the obvious is that the more we're beginning to learn about George Zimmerman, the more silly it is to believe that this was a guy who was motivated by racial animus toward Trayvon Martin and shot him for that reason. That's what they would have to be able to make a case of. That's what they would have to, that would be their responsibility to prove to a jury if they tried him for civil rights violations. That somehow this would be the first man in America who called the police beforehand, before going out to shoot someone because he didn't like the color of his skin. So, you know, that is not going anywhere. If you're just joining me, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, we have some fascinating controversies to get through today. One of them national, one of them local. The local controversy is, you remember that Marysville police officer? He and his wife and kids on their way in the family van to a wedding, and his ankle holster, the gun he puts in his ankle holster, he didn't secure it, so he just kind of put it in the console, and one of the kids gets it, shoots and kills his sister, and he, of course, not only lost his daughter, but he's facing charges. Now he has lost his job, and he's trying to get his job back. Question is, should he be allowed to get his job back, or should he, in addition to losing his daughter, lose his job? We also have the story of New York PD under fire for a policy they have called stop and frisk that they argue quite persuasively is completely, fully constitutional and which is saving lives. Nevertheless, the policy in this year where they're electing a new mayor in New York, just as they are in Seattle, is under fire big time. You know, here is the real unstated dilemma that is facing Democrats in our major cities. And Bill O'Reilly actually touched on this last night. Liberals don't know how to confront gangsta culture. And it's gangsta culture that is responsible for much of the violence and much of the drugs, much of the crime in inner cities. And liberal Democrats just don't know what to do. Because everything they want to do runs headlong into their liberal instincts. I give you a perfect example is Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel has this notorious tough guy, take no prisoners reputation as a congressman and as the president's chief of staff. And he gets elected mayor of Chicago. He's going to go back there. He's going to start showing people how it's done. And he's absolutely flat-footed. Does not know what to do about all this violence in the city of Chicago. I guess now Congress, the Congressional Black Caucus is going to go to Chicago and have a summit. So at least now they're paying some attention to what is going on. 500 people a year killed, most of them by gunfire, most of the overwhelming majority African-Americans, and most of the people pulling the trigger, African-Americans, which doesn't seem to bother African-American leaders. I mean, there are innocent, I mean, completely innocent, you know, 5-year-old kids killed on stoops and streets and parks because they're in the wrong place at the wrong times when bullets fly. And you don't hear anywhere near the moral outrage you did over George Zimmerman. But, you know, putting that aside, if they want to, you know, the stop and frisk methods are used by Mayor Bloomberg because, and Police Commissioner Ray Kelly there, who has a great piece about it in this morning's Wall Street Journal, they go for these tactics because they work. They estimate that in the last 10 years, their stop and frisk policy in New York has saved 7,000 lives, almost 7,500 lives. But in Chicago, they won't do that because it will stir up a political hornet's nest. So the mayor, well, he talks about, you know, can we please find common ground here? We need a policy that makes this city safer. For the so-called tough guy is just melting. He's not the least bit tough when it comes to battling crime. Because liberals are their own worst enemies here. They don't want to crack down on criminals, even if the criminals are using weapons. They are willing to crack down on weapons, but they don't want to crack down on crooks. Liberals are famous for not wanting to crack down on crooks. They instinctively move toward less, not more, incarceration for people who commit crimes. So they don't want to crack down on criminals. They don't want to give police proactive tools like stop and frisk. And the way that policy works is if you have reason to believe that someone might be carrying a weapon, you can stop them, ask them questions, and if you think that there's reason to search them, to do so. And other than that, what are we back to? Well, social programs run by unionized government employees. Well, more money for intervention and at-risk youth in our schools. I mean, again, same old, that just doesn't work. That's the real problem. Did you hear President Obama? President Obama cannot bring himself to go after, and I mean, not a throwaway line here or there, but really go after the self-immolating culture of gangster rap. I'll give you another example. Back in the 70s, Jesse Jackson, before he ran for office, when he was still arguably a civil rights leader, and he was probably the most prominent civil rights leader, he used to go to schools and give speeches, primarily African-American schools, where he would say, you know, down with dope, up with hope. I am somebody. You know, I may not have a lot of money, but I am somebody. It was all about individual pride and individual responsibility. And during that time, the Rolling Stones had released an album called Some Girls. And there's a line in there about black women just want to have sex all night. I'm really cleaning up that line. And Jackson excoriated the Rolling Stones for saying that in a song. And he was contrasting that with, you know, the OJs and Stevie Wonder, you know, uplifting music. And, you know, he's making a fair point about cultural rot. Have you heard Jesse Jackson utter a word of criticism about some of the hip-hop music that's out there in the last 10 years? And you know how ugly and awful it is? He's gone mute. Again, liberals don't know how to confront gangsta culture. And that is one reason why that culture flourishes in the inner core of our urban areas. And as long as that culture flourishes, we are going to continue to have crime. We're going to continue to have violence. We're going to continue to have problems with our schools. We're going to continue to have horrendous out-of-wedlock birth rates. Continue to have a drug culture. Because that is what, you know, that is all about.